Thank you.
I'll do it. Thank you, James.
Welcome to the Political Cesspool, known worldwide as the South's foremost conservative populist radio program. April is Confederate Heritage and History Month, and here at the Political Cesspool, we're doing our part to bring you the best guests and interviews to raise the public's awareness. Stand by now for another great installment of the Political Cesspool, and here's your host, James Edwards.
Okay. So it is May, but so what? We're still celebrating Confederate History Month, at least in the introduction to this program. Welcome, everyone, to the Political Cesspool radio program. I'm your host, James Edwards, joined in studio tonight, co-hosting with me, my good friend and brother, Winston Smith, from the fabulous palatial confines of AM 1380 WLRM Radio in Memphis, Tennessee, our flagship station. Saturday, May 2nd, we are loaded for bear and ready for the hunt. Thank you for tuning in this evening. Winston, how are you?
I am very well, James. How are you these days? I'm glad you were busy this week, had things to do, and I was especially glad to get the call that we got just before we came on the air.
Yeah, that's right. Ladies and gentlemen, to what Winston's alluding to, let me fill you in. We had planned not to have a guest this afternoon. We have a lot to talk to you about, and I was going to spend the time with you, kind of giving you a little porch talking, as Bob Whitaker might say. Winston and I had a lot of content for you, but we got a call literally 30 seconds before we came on air from our very good friend, attorney Edgar J. Steele, Ed Steele, and he'll be joining us in an hour and a half at 7:30. He'll be on tonight's program to talk about an explosive situation that has manifested in Idaho. Something that, I guarantee you, it's hot off the press, and it's something that's got Ed fired up, and in hearing about it and for 30 seconds that I could, it's something that I very much want to bring to your attention tonight. It
was a bombshell.
I'm not going to even give him a hint, Winston. It is a bombshell.
That's all I'm going to say, is it was an absolute bombshell, and you will want to hear about it. It will disgust you. It will make you mad as hell. And, James, if there's something we need these days, it is constitutional conservatives who are mad as hell.
Well, and Ed Steele's one of them. I love Ed Steele, and I don't mind saying that on the air for everyone to hear. We've had a lot of guests on this program, and I've told this to Ed. I've told this to our producers over the years. There is not one guest, and you look at the guests we've had, we're honored to have been able to interview so many heavyweights and household names, but not one of them has brought the audience that Ed Steele does each and every appearance. He has a great following. He's a great man, and he's going to be on to tell us, I guess, breaking news. Obviously, if he called us 30 seconds before airtime, it has to be something that was a pretty recent occurrence. So we're looking forward to sharing Ed's story with you during tonight's program about halfway through. That being said, again, it is May. Confederate History Month is over, but of course it's something that lives on in our hearts every day of the year, and apparently for one more week at least in our introduction. But don't get confused. We are live on the air tonight, and we know what month it is. Now, Winston, I told you, you know, we got a lot to talk about tonight, but one of the things that I have been monitoring on the news, I'm sure as everyone else has, but I haven't really dug into the information quite as much as perhaps I should. What's going on with this so-called swine flu? I mean, what's your take on it?
My take on it is that this is much ado about nothing. Look, yes, there are some cases of swine flu. And by the way, I am not going to acquiesce to the demands of certain organizations that we stop calling it swine flu. As you know, there are certain Zionist elements wanted the name swine flu to be dropped because the mention of porcine things is offensive to Jews and to Muslims. And I just don't think, first of all, that they give a rodent's backside about the feelings of Muslims. And second of all, there is nothing wrong with calling it swine flu.
Well, it's just another way for them to remind themselves how powerful they are. How in the world is it offensive if it's a if it's a,
it's a cheap shot. It's a cheap attempt to control language. And
exactly. They're testing the waters to find out how much power they have. I mean, if this is a disease that supposedly originates out of swine, why not call it a swine virus or a swine flu? I mean, it makes sense to me. But I get it. They pretend like they can't eat pork or anything like that. But I mean, is it really offensive that we say the word pig? I mean,
well, if it's a matter of saying things that's offensive, just saying the word ADL or the Anti-Defamation League, that is highly offensive to me, and nothing would make me happier than to see that entire phrase dropped from our lexicon and to see that organization dropped from the face of the earth. And that is not to say that I wish death upon anybody like that. Does not mean to say that I want 6 million Jews killed. It just means that when you get right down to it, the ADL is a satanic and subversive organization, and it needs to be gotten rid of.
Well, it's an anti-American organization. It's anti-Christian. It's anti-everything that made this country great. And the only mm-hmm. people that they target for persecution are people who are of the make and mold of the framers of this country, of this Constitution, and you're exactly right. But anyway, back to the swine flu. I mean, they're saying this could be a global pandemic. I think 100 people have died from it. Is this something, and I've heard stories from both sides, that this is a government-manufactured disease? You know, I don't know.
Well, I don't know. I'm certain it's not a government-manufactured disease. I am absolutely certain that it is a government-manufactured crisis. You know, we have Rahm Emanuel, who is the de facto president. He is the one pulling the strings behind his puppet, Barack Hussein Obama. And he is quoted as saying something like, you should never let a crisis go to waste. What he means by that is you should look for ways to make political hay. And this is one of those things that he can use to make political hay. He can build this up into a crisis, and he can have his boy – get it? His boy? go in front of cameras and make wonderful speeches and make him look good. This is smoke and mirrors. This is part of a natural flu cycle. It happens every year. And while I lament the death of anyone for most any reason, but especially from disease, innocent people who die from diseases, we need to pay attention to it and take measures to keep ourselves from getting it. But as far as this being a crisis, this is a nothing sandwich.
Yeah, we've got a crisis. We've got a crisis that originates from Mexico, but I don't know if it's this flu. And, you know, I think a case broke out here in Memphis, Winston, and they closed like every school in Tennessee or something like
yes,
that.
Yes, they did that.
You know, it's like if it snows.
But what are you going to do? I mean, the schools, you know, schools are they are big targets for lawsuits. You know, it wasn't that long ago that we had a little bit of light snow in this area, and a school bus had an accident, and those lawsuits cost up in the millions of dollars. And if some kid came down with swine flu in school, and if all they have to do is establish and say that the school did not do enough to protect that child, well, the school system would be out millions of dollars. And that may sound cynical, folks, but that's just the way it is.
People, and we don't like the school system, but I mean, come on.
No, I don't like it, but part of the reason we don't like it is because people take advantage of it to enrich themselves. And that includes not just the administrators, but that includes parents who are always on a lookout for a lawsuit.
Well, and of course, never mind the fact that it's nothing more. I mean, to call it a school anymore is a stretch. It's an indoctrination camp, and they're being indoctrinated with all the wrong ideas, of course. But I guess basically my final thought on the whole swine flu thing, and it's really not that big of a story compared to some of the things we normally talk about on this show, but since everybody in the world's talking about it, I reckon that the political cesspool host might also register an opinion. I guess it's just like everything else that's exported from Mexico. It's detrimental to our health.
You're absolutely right.
Don't get it. You know, try not to catch it. Yeah. I don't know what you can do.
Folks,
I mean, so can they not treat it, Winston? Is it like Ebola or something?
And, Go ahead, James.
No, I was just saying, I mean, can they treat – I am so disconnected from this story. I've been researching other things this week in preparation for today's show. As you mentioned, I've been busy with other matters. But, I mean, can they treat it? Are you dead if you get it? Is it like the Ebola virus?
Oh, yes, it's treatable. You treat it with normal flu medications. One is called Tamiflu. I've taken that for flu, and it works very well. James, one thing I did want to point out about this is the use of the word pandemic. You know, we used to call things like this epidemics, but the word epidemic is kind of a localized thing.
Yeah, and nothing can be localized anymore, not even diseases. Yeah.
It's not big enough. In order to sell news, it has to be big news. And frankly, an epidemic just is not big enough to sell. So you got to make it a pandemic. There will never be another epidemic. Every disease henceforth is going to be a pandemic or a potential pandemic.
I guess that's our take on the swine flu then.
Be careful. Wash your hands.
Don't go to Mexico City. You should be all right. You know, but you brought up an interesting point, Winston, that, we'll have to bring up that interesting point after this break. Stay tuned to the Political Cesspool, everybody. More to come.
Don't go away. The Political Cesspool guys will be back right after these messages.
Don't let me be misunderstood. Don't let me be misunderstood.
Please don't understand me, baby.
Don't let me be misunderstood.
Don't misunderstand.
Jump in the Political Cesspool with James and the gang. Call us tonight at 1-866-986-6397. And here's the host of the Political Cesspool, James Edwards.
All right, I promised myself we wouldn't even spend this much time on it because, like Winston, I agree that this really isn't much of a story, at least not a story big enough to crack the Political Cesspool's commentary. But nevertheless, Winston, you did have a pretty observant thought on the whole ordeal. If this is such a big global pandemic as Obama and DHS and all of these other organizations are telling us it is, wouldn't you think it would be in America's interest to at least stop the flights in from Mexico Center, the epicenter of this whole concocted idea? I mean, it seems, I guess that would be racist.
We have the Vice President of the United States telling his family to stay off of airplanes and subways because he knows it's just not a good idea to be in an enclosed space with someone who's carrying this disease. But if this thing is as bad as we're being told it is, and knowing from where it originated, why are we still allowing those planes upon which Joe Biden would not let his family go into our country? Why are we letting sick people, why are we letting sick Mexicans come into this country?
It's a good question. I guarantee Cuba. You, I'll tell you this, Winston, I would bet my bottom dollar on this. If the swine flu had originated in Norway, they wouldn't have a problem banning flights from Norway over here. You know what I'm getting at?
Yeah, because Norway is full of white people.
There you go. So therefore, it's not racist. But anyway, right. I think the biggest story of all of this is coming out of Boston.
It's a story.
Well, that it's a story at all. But I guess the political from the politically correct aspect of it, and there's always a political angle into anything, even made up pandemics. Out of Boston radio talk show host Jay Severin. I've never heard of him. He's been suspended from his job indefinitely and probably permanently for making politically incorrect remarks about the Mexican invaders of our country. And this was specifically in response to the swine flu debate. In one of his broadcasts last week, Severin said, quote, "So now, in addition to the venereal disease and the other leading exports of Mexico, women with mustaches and VD, now we have swine flu." He later described Mexicans as, quote, "the world's lowest of primitives." I'll take issue with him on that.
But
he did go on to say, "When we are the magnet for primitives around the world, and we are, and it's not the primitives' fault, by the way. I'm not blaming them for being primitives. I'm merely observing the fact that they're primitive," end quote. This talk show host from Boston went on to say that Mexicans are destroying schools and hospitals in the United States. He also criticized their hygiene. And his final quote was, "It's millions of leeches from a primitive country here." to come here and leech off you, and with it, they're ruining the schools, the hospitals, and a lot of life in America. Winston, I agree with absolutely everything he said. He didn't say anything. I've found that offensive. I mean, he couldn't have offended them more than they offend me on a daily basis. And when I say they, I'm talking about the illegal aliens that come in and use this country as a flop house, and the media that presents them as equal to or better than the hardworking Americans that actually made this country. But he got suspended, probably fired. The SPLC has already put him on the hate watch list. And listen, I mean, he basically voiced the opinion that I think everybody in this country shares, or at least the vast majority of people in this country shares. But he paid the price. He learned how quickly it is to end up in the political cesspool of talk radio, if you is. He's right there with us now because, well, he told the truth.
The truth is no defense. The truth is an out-of-fashion commodity these days, and we already have legislation that is probably going to pass that will stifle the free speech of people like you and me, James, and everybody else who simply wants to protect their children from certain sexual predators. We'll talk more about that later, but this is just one more attempt to intimidate, and it'll work. It'll work.
Winston, obviously we don't mind being called a lot of names because, first of all, we know that they're not applicable. We know that they're just Marxist constructs. People can call us anything we want, but we're telling the truth as we see it. And, you know, it's our God-given right to have that freedom of speech. So we don't mind being called a bunch of names by people who hate us because we understand why they're doing that, to try to shut us up. But unfortunately, I don't know who Jay Severin is. I liked what he said here. But it'll probably work. You know, this is something that will obviously they put this guy up. And the SPLC's tried to get us taken off the air, but the station managers, you know, they've got backbone here in Memphis and with our affiliates and with Liberty News. And so they don't do it because we're not doing anything untoward. We're not doing anything dishonest or reprehensible. But this guy, you know, it sends a message to the other people of the talk radio world that, listen, if you tell the truth, you could be fired just like this guy, so you better toe the line, fellas.
Yeah, he's not going to get the second chance that Don Imus got. He's gone. This will not. We'll never hear from this guy again.
Well, at least we heard from him once.
Yeah.
Hey, but you know, speaking of radio, there is some good news, and I'll make this quick because people outside of Memphis won't know about it. Mike Fleming got fired. So.
Well, I don't know that I share your joy with it because
I love it.
He wasn't all that bad. There are worse.
You must have never heard him when he was talking about us.
Say what?
I said you must have never heard him when he was talking about us.
Yeah, I do, but he's a commercial host. He goes to a pay window for his work, and he's got to toe that line. But my gosh, there are far, far worse people on the airwaves here in Memphis, and I think you know who I'm talking about.
All of them.
We have a certain Negro guy on the radio here during the day, and he is as bombastic and as racist and as insulting and as crass and as vulgar as anybody can be, and yet there's not a chance he's going to be taken off the air or even disciplined for his pablum.
Yeah, and the gentleman to which you refer, if I may use the term loosely, you know, this is a guy that flat out calls for violence on the air. I mean, he does everything that you're never supposed to do in public or in private, and then of course he's allowed to proceed with immunity. If you didn't like Mike Fleming getting fired, you certainly want to approve of his replacement. It looks like Ben Ferguson's moving into that slot on 600 here in Memphis.
Well, I'll say, I was not a fan of Mike Fleming, but I did not dislike him. Even when he criticized us, I know he did that because he was told to do it. And do you think he ever really listened to our show? Hell no. He wouldn't listen to us for not 5 minutes. So he was speaking ignorantly of us. And, you know, why he was the number one rated talk show in Memphis, and he got the can. I do wish him well.
Even the political cesspool hosting staff can split hairs from time to time, folks. This is proof positive. I didn't like Fleming. I'm glad he's gone. But then again, I hate all neoconservatives. So, and I'll tell you this, I have more disdain in my heart for people of that ilk than the most ardent Marxist. I mean, you know, if I'm being honest here.
Yeah.
But,
But in the grand scheme of things, James, was Mike Fleming ever taken seriously? Does he have the same impact that we have?
No, of course not. I mean, look, Mike Fleming's never been on CNN. Mike Fleming's never been quoted in Newsweek like you were last week. Mike Fleming's, for what this show has done, our show, compared to what, this is a guy that's on the station of Memphis that carries with Hannity and Limbaugh, et cetera, the big so-called conservative talk station. No, he's never made half of the headlines that we have. And we've made these headlines not because we're sensational hosts going out to be shock jocks, just because we tell the truth. And we do it in a very uncompromising way, not to be offensive, but to rally the defense of America, to reclaim America's destiny. And so in doing that and in not backing down when we were put to the flames and in standing the test of time for 5 years as we have, we've certainly made more headlines than Fleming. But anyway, people who live outside of Memphis have no idea who we're talking about, but I thought it was newsworthy since we were on the topic of radio. But we've got to go to another break. Much more to come in the political cesspool tonight. You're not going to want to miss it. Stay tuned for more.
Don't go away. The political cesspool guys will be back right after these messages. Get on the show and express your opinion in the political cesspool. Call us toll-free at 1-866-986-6397.
Welcome back to the show, everyone. James Edwards here with you in the political cesspool tonight, joined by Winston Smith, who is serving as co-host this evening. We're about to go behind enemy lines with Keith Alexander in this newly installed weekly segment that we have at 6:30 every Saturday night with our local correspondent, Mr. Keith Alexander. We're going to be talking to Keith about the pending hate crimes legislation that could be very close to passing and what that might mean for us and for everyone for that matter. But in the previous segment, and before we get to Keith, we were making mention of radio hosts here in Memphis. We were talking about interviews and the fellow up in Boston who had been fired for speaking the truth. I had mentioned, and I just want to bring this up before we get off the subject because I'll forget if I don't. We had mentioned that, once again, the political cesspool had made national news, being mentioned in Newsweek magazine last week, and it was just a short mention, but, just spell our name right. Winston actually got the quote in on that one. They wanted to interview me, but I told them if they didn't give me the cover, I wouldn't do it, so I sent that over to Winston's desk. But because of that, we've been getting a lot of nice emails from people who are finding out about us, believe it or not, for the first time. And we're happy to welcome them to our ever-growing audience this evening. And also because of the plug-in Newsweek last week, I have been doing the radio interview circuit once again. I was on with Rick Besada up in Chicago last Wednesday, I believe it was. And we've got an interview tomorrow in Buffalo, New York, on AM 1650 with our good friend Jim Berryman. So if you can't get enough political cesspool when we're on, listen to us when we're doing these interviews. And they're all documented at our website, thepoliticalcesspool.org, as is everything that we cover on this program, from content to commentary. It's all documented. And you can do further research for yourself by visiting our blog at thepoliticalcesspool.org. Basically, all the news that is news about this show is there at our official internet headquarters. Now, with that being said, don't forget, in about an hour's time, we're going to be joined by the very effusive, very demonstrative Edgar J. Steele, coming on short notice to give us the scoop on a developing story. But before we go there, let's first go, as I mentioned, behind enemy lines with Keith Alexander. Keith, what's in your crosshairs tonight, my friend?
Of course, the new enhanced Federal Hate Crimes Act, what is actually being proposed and what has passed the House of Representatives is an enhancement or an addition to the Federal Hate Crimes Act of 1969, which will bring sexual orientation within the protected class of people and thought that is going to be punished now, along with race and along with ethnicity and a few other things. So that's really what, you know, the implications of that, I think, are important. But before you guys leave the local ferment of radio hosts.
That's right.
Let me just say this. The difference between the political cesspool, the reason why I'm not shedding any tears about either Ben Ferguson or Mike Fleming's lost his job, quite frankly, whoever they put in his place is just going to be a matter of time. These local talk show hosts in Memphis, at least, are terrible wordsmiths. They just don't have the education and they don't have the facility with the English language to set a good example, quite frankly, for the youth of America. They butcher syntax. They mispronounce words. They are constantly trying to add filler phrases and things like this because their minds just aren't sharp enough to handle it. And Mike Fleming was about the worst I've ever seen. And Ben Ferguson runs him a close second. So, quite frankly, James, they're not in your league or yours either, Winston.
Well, we appreciate you saying that, Keith. Actually, the reason we bring you on is to bring up our intellectual capacity. You make us all look bad, and I say that in a very loving way. We really love the depth of analysis that you bring to this program. But, yeah, just to let people know, and I think we've let them know quite clearly, we have no problem kicking a dog while he's down, particularly if he is a dog, and Fleming was. But, okay. Keith, the hate crimes bill. Now, we've talked about this for years. Everybody knows what it is. Everybody knows what it's going to do and why the powers that be want it to be passed. I mean, we've had Ted Pike on this show 40 times, if he's been on once over the years, giving us information about this, what it's all about, how we can stop it. And for the last several attempts, we have been able to stop it. I don't know if it's going to be the case this time. God willing, it will be. But let me just ask you a very elementary question, Keith, about all this, and then I'll let you go back into your commentary about the hate crimes legislation, which is working its way through Washington as we speak this evening. Could you ever imagine a scenario in which this law, if it's passed, would be enforced against a minority? Is there anything a non-white could say that would have him in violation of the hate crime / thought crime initiative, or is this reserved solely for European Americans? Are we the only ones that are going to be punished by this?
Well, all we can do is look at history and look at similar legislation. And what I have in mind here is the Voting Rights Act of 1965, another legal initiative, part of the civil rights movement, just like this federal Hate Crime Act of 1969. Voting Rights Act of 65 is another thing to punish European Americans, and particularly Southerners. If you know, are aware of the Voting Rights Act of 1965, it applies only to the states of the former Confederacy or any other states in which there was legally sanctioned segregation. So in other words, the South. It's a specific law directed at the South, and you find these politically correct Southern politicians jumping on the bandwagon about every 10 years when it comes up for renewal, trying to prove what jolly good politically correct fellows they are by voting for it.
Right.
Well, there's been one instance in the entire history from 1965 to today of the Voting Rights Act being used successfully to prosecute a non-white. That was down here in our neighborhood at Knoxville County, Mississippi, where a black political boss controlled the Democratic Party and local county politics and used his office as election commissioner to do everything he could to prevent white people from registering to vote and vote. And surprise of all surprises, the George Bush administration went after him and successfully prosecuted him, and they got a court order.
All right, so basically, if history is any indicator, if you look at the Voting Rights Act, only once in about 50 years has a black been proven guilty of that. So we pretty much know how it's going to go this way.
And furthermore, it really, this litigation in Knoxville County didn't come to an end until during the Obama administration. And Eric Holder, who was the black U.S. Attorney General at the time, so I had nothing to say. As they say, the silence was deafening. They found that they obviously did not support the action, and I guarantee you there'll be no similar actions under the Obama administration to go after any minorities either under hate speech, under the Hate Crime Act, or under the Voting Rights Act, or any other Civil Rights Act.
So 100,000 to 1 is about what it's going to be. The Justice Department, whoever's supposed to enforce this kind of stuff, if, again, God forbid, it passes, you're probably looking about a ratio of 100,000 to 1, if not more.
I predict it's going to pass, James.
Huh?
This time, I predict it is going to pass. Because we now have a filibuster-proof Democratic majority in both houses of Congress.
Now, it already passed the House, right? Now it's got to go to the Senate.
Yeah, and Arlen Specter just defected to the Democratic Party.
He was probably
the poster boy for rhino, for being a rhino, a Republican in name only. If you look that term up, it's probably got Arlen Specter's picture next to him in the dictionary. But... you know, he was never an ally, but now he has made it official. He's gone to the Democrats. And see, this is what the left does. Like you said, Ted Pike was able to show that they have tried to do this, I think, 43 different times. And they're like the devil. They never sleep. Liberals are like the devil. They never sleep.
It's what we always talk about. I mean,
eventually they win.
They can afford to miss 1,000 times. We can't afford to miss once. I mean, we can beat this back, as you said, 43, 48 times already, and all they have to do is pass it once, and all that effort of resistance that we put forth in previous years is basically amounts to nothing.
Well, it's just like, you know, the Republicans, basically, when the Democrats get in, they go full speed ahead to the left. When the Republicans get in, they just maintain the status quo wherever it is for whatever time they're in office until the Democrats get in, and then they move us even further to the left. There's never any
Keith, we've got 10 seconds to break
territory when the Republicans get in.
Got 10 seconds to break. We'll pick this up on the other side. But as you've always said, Keith, modern-day conservatism is about one step behind radical Marxism. And with that thought being in your mind, we'll be back with more in just a minute.
Don't go away. The Political Cesspool guys will be back right after these messages.
We gotta get out of this place. If it's the last thing we ever do, we gotta get out of this place. Girl, there's a better life.
Welcome back. To get on the Political Cesspool, call us on James's Dime, toll-free, at 1-866-986-6397. And here's the host of the Political Cesspool, James Edwards.
Welcome back to the show. We have now trained our sights on the Federal Hate Crimes Act, the Orwellian laws that are working their way through Congress as we speak. It's already been passed by the House of Representatives. It's on its way to the Senate. Looks like it very well could pass. I'm not going to say it's an absolute because we have beaten this thing before. Winston had actually spoken with Reverend Ted Pike earlier today, and as you might imagine, the man is just absolutely exhausted. We've mentioned that he's been on here several dozen times over the years to talk about this issue. He does talk shows every day all over the country. Couldn't be with us tonight on the short notice, but he wanted us to remind you to visit his website at truthtellers.org, where you can get more information about this and get the contact number so you can call and register your protest to this initiative. But Keith, I tell you, obviously it's a no-brainer to observe the fact that if this is indeed passed, one of the many, many detrimental effects it will have is that it will accelerate the radical sodomite agenda tenfold. I mean, basically, the writing's already on the wall. You've got a handful of states that have already legalized so-called gay marriage. The churches are offering impotent resistance. They're backpedaling as fast as they can. If this gets passed, I mean, you can kiss marriage goodbye just with everything else that we've founded. But Keith, your thoughts on it all?
Well, you know, in the big picture, societal, cultural, civilizational context, that's what the purpose of all this is. It is to normalize sodomy. And sodomy, of course, are non-procreative sex, which, of course, homosexual sex is one of the primary types of non-procreative sex, is prohibited by every major religion in the world, not just Christianity. Muslims prohibit it. Jews prohibit it. Zoroastrians prohibit it. So Buddhists, Hindus, and Christians. I don't know of any major religion in the world that endorses homosexuality. So basically, it's an assault against any religion, not just Christianity. In America, we're primarily Christians, but it's against the old order, and it's against the old order everywhere.
Well, apparently it's not against the Zionist old order, and because they want it, and because they want it to use as a wedge to deconstruct Western civilization and white culture. Of course, that's what Western civilization is. Then it's going to be plowed through. We're going to be railroaded on it. As you said, this is something, one of the few things that all of these religions have in common, and yet even then it's not enough. Even though 90%, would you say, Keith, 90% of humanity is diametrically opposed to this perversity, but because, well, the ruling elite of America, and we all know who that is, because they don't have a problem with it.
They have more than not a problem with it. They want it because they know it will have a destructive, corrosive effect on traditional Gentile culture.
And it's not exactly. That's the key. It's not that they have any sort of love for sodomy. Well, maybe they do. But, I mean, you know, they don't really care about the homosexuals any more than they care about anybody. But because it will have that effect on the grand scheme of things, on Western Christian culture, then... you know, it's going to get back to the hill. But that's just, again, one of the many, many detrimental effects that we can expect to see. I mean, it'll remain to be seen what happens to talk radio in general. You know, we'll be here until God himself calls us home as long as we can hack it. But it's going to be interesting to see if this, in fact, does pass. And it's not a given yet. Again, folks, don't paint me as down in the mouth. It's probable that it'll be passed because of the demographics in the House and the Senate now, but you know, let's fight this thing to the bitter end. That's our duty. But Winston, what's your take on everything? Winston stepped out of the room. My bad on that one. But Keith, continue on with your excellent commentary, sir.
Well, let's look at what the practical effects will be on this. I'm assuming that this is not a hate speech law, although that they normally follow shortly thereafter. In other words, they're not going to be arresting ministers for preaching against sodomy and against homosexuality now under this law. But, of course, this is like the camel's nose in the tent.
That's right.
To get to that point, what it does is, for example, if you've ever been outspoken, if you, let's say, you're a preacher who is spoken out about how unbiblical homosexuality is from your pulpit, or in a quotation to the local newspaper, if you are ever unfortunate enough to be a suspect in a crime, this will be marched out front and center. If you're prosecuted in court, this is the type of information that without these hate crime laws would be considered extremely prejudicial, and none of this evidence could come in to pollute the minds of the jury and try to get them to prosecute you because you have politically incorrect thoughts. But now, because of hate crime legislation on this, now all of that stuff comes in, becomes relevant, and basically you're going to be the victim of a kangaroo court, in effect, where all of these rumors, all of these comments, which, you know, may be unpopular with the people that are sitting in the jury box, are going to come out. And it's going to have a prejudicial effect. It's going to be a way to enforce conformity with the liberal agenda, which is that, you know, everything's radically egalitarian, anything goes. You know, what's wrong with our kind of love? All meat and no potatoes. You know, well, how do you know you don't like it if you hadn't tried it? You know,
right,
that type
exactly.
of approach.
Well, again, Keith, you know, this is just one of the things. It's important. I mean, when you're as we are, you're fighting a retreating battle on all fronts. It's hard to really focus on, well, what to focus on, if you know what I'm saying. But, I mean, this is something that really disturbs me because I guess the most important aspect of it all is that the common sense notion that heterosexuality is natural, sodomy is perverted and an abomination, that's basically one of the final vestiges of our culture that we can still speak freely about, and that most people would still not be afraid to speak out on publicly. And I tell you, you know, you see that go, and man, there's really nothing else that's safe to speak of. I don't know. I guess I hate to see that.
Well, what's happening, I think, James, is that, you know, this is a perfect example of cultural Marxist principles like repressive tolerance and critical theory working. And you notice how they relentlessly come back against the culture like water against a rock. Like you said, they've been defeated 43 times in their efforts to pass this particular amendment to the Federal Hate Crimes Act of 1969. But they keep dutifully marching back every time. Now they finally got the supermajority that they wanted in Congress. And you're going to see America transformed into a, you know, radically leftist, Marxist, socialist nation under the Obama administration.
Yeah, I think unless we're delivered a miracle, and I'm not going to count that out, because every now and then we surprise ourselves by flexing our muscles, the grassroots populists of this country will rise up and body slam the elite. It happens once in a blue moon. And unless something like that occurs in this scenario, I truly believe, Keith, that as bad as America is today, if 4 years from now, we're going to be wishing we could go back to the good old days of 2009. I really believe we're set up for such a radical and extreme decline over the course of the next 4 years. All of the pieces are in place.
Back, though, we're going to have to do something different from what has always happened in the past when the people vote in the Republicans who are supposedly going to be the champions of conservatism. They're going to have to do more than just sit back and maintain the status quo wherever that may be.
Well, as you've always said, Keith, what our people have to do is begin to mimic the tactics of the left. No matter what you can say, you cannot deny the fact that they have been very successful. We need to borrow their playbook and start implementing it. But, of course, it would take a little bit of initiative and drive. I know our people act as though they're being put out if you ask them to pay $5 to go to a meeting and sit there for 2 hours for once in their life. You know, that's too much for our people to expend. We've got
to
get over that. We have a duty.
The blue states of America that never vote for the actual Republican candidate, choosing the Republican nominee. That's been the essential problem that has caused the fecklessness and the impotence of conservatism over the past 50 years.
Well, Keith, we got about a minute left. Final word on this. I know your segments always fly by too quickly. We'll pick it up next week if you'd like. What's the final word for this installment before we head into the second hour?
Well, I think we're going to have to realize that there's no stopping. That these people will stop at nothing. They will stop at nothing until basically they're going to do what Franz Fanon said. He said that he was a black revolutionary from France who came from Guyana originally, and he said the true goal of the slave is not to win his freedom, but rather to exchange places with his slave master. The only way that this thing is going to play out is for white people to be at the bottom of the totem pole societally with everyone else on top of them.
Well, Keith,
and people need to recognize that, and this is just one more part of the puzzle.
We got to share the tenacity of the left and fight them back with equal fervor. We'll be back with the second hour of tonight's installment right after this.
1 hour down and two to go. Stay tuned. Hour number two of The Political Cesspool comes your way right after these messages.
And Harv leaped to his feet and said, something's got a hold on me. Yow! The day the squirrel went berserk in the first self-righteous church in that sleeping little town of Pascagoula. It was a fight for survival that broke out in revival. They were jumping pews and shouting, Harv hit the aisles dancing and screaming. Some thought he had religion, others thought he had a demon. And Harv thought he had a weed eater loose in his fruit and blooms. He fell to his knees to plead and beg, and the squirrel ran out of his britches leg unobserved to the other side of the room. All the way down to the amen.